This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
This will be the first regulation loss for Winnipeg in this building since December the 14th when they lost to the Chicago Blackhawks. It was academic to drop the puck. Horn sounds to end it here tonight, and Winnipeg loses for the first time on home ice in regulation in a couple of months. The final score, St. Louis 5, Winnipeg 2.
A disappointing night at Bell MTS Place last night for the hometown team, Winnipeg Jets, dropping that 5-2 decision to the St. Louis Blues. Clearly, the Jets should just not play Friday night Central Division matchups at home anymore. They just can't quite get things together. They got another one next Friday, though. Colorado Avalanche in town next Friday. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, for all those joining us live this morning via the iHeartRadio app and at TSN1290.ca. We say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of Winnipeg Jets and NHL conversation for you on a very busy Saturday morning. We'll look back at last night's Jets-Blues game. We'll look ahead to tomorrow afternoon's Jets-Rangers game. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can do so via Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Jets and Moose news, that's IllegalCurve.com. And, of course, you can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Alongside Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Gentlemen, good morning to you on this Saturday morning.
Good morning.
A disappointing effort last night for the Winnipeg Jets, dropping that 5-2 decision. A decision that a game that can really be summed up well by Jets head coach Paul Maurice, who was very succinct in how he described the Jets' performance last night.
Like I said, I mean, we're going to look a hard look at it like we did after the last two losses that we've had at home. Hasn't been an accountability issue in here. We've played pretty darn well at home. We were horse tonight. That's a technical term for our game. And nobody's in a good mood, and you're angry. But you don't like to get beat like that. And we got beat in St. Louis and played one hell of a game. We weren't any good tonight and didn't deserve to win the game.
Horse manure. That's how Paul Maurice described the Jets' performance last night. As I said, quite succinct, and he's not wrong. The Jets were outplayed right from the start of the faceoff last night against the Blues.
Yeah, I agree with what you said, Drew, and I agree with what Paul Maurice said there. I mean, the Jets really only had one good period. It was the final period where I think they got half of their shots. They only had 22 shots all night. And, you know, for a St. Louis Blues team that had played the previous night, you thought that the Jets would have the edge as far as energy goes, but The Blues just looked better out there. They outplayed the Jets. They looked quicker, and the Blues are not a quick team. I mean, the Jets are a much quicker team than the Blues, but you know they just didn't have it last night. And you know you saw it in chunks of that game. And you know you go back and you look at some of the chances that the Jets had in the first period. You had that give and go between Andrew Kopp and Kyle Connor, and you know Connor isn't able to get a shot there, Dave. And then you know Andrew Kopp goes in alone, and Jake Allen makes a big save. So I mean the Jets did have their chances early on in that game, and you know the Blues just opened the game up in that third period. The Jets just weren't very sharp in their own zone, I thought, throughout the night, and they weren't very fast through the neutral zone. I thought the Blues did a good job of slowing the Jets down in the middle portion of the ice. And, you know, you look at Josh Morrissey and Tyler Myers, and I realize, you know, a lot of people are criticizing them right now, but let's be honest, guys. Morrissey and Myers have been the Jets' two best defensemen for much of the year, and you would put Jacob Trouba in that class as well, and I thought they really missed Jacob Trouba last night. But I mean, that first goal, I mean, it's miscommunication between Wheeler and Myers, and then you know Josh Morrissey has to go chase the puck behind the net, and it results in the goal from Tarasenko there. But I thought that was really kind of the story of the night. The Jets just weren't crisp in their own zone. They didn't generate enough offense. I mean, they had 12 shots after two periods, so yeah. It just wasn't a very good effort from the Jets. But, you know, they're still looking pretty good here on this homestand. They're 3-1-1. They could easily be 4-1 when you consider, you know, they could have got, you know, the extra point against the Vegas Golden Knights. So I don't think you dwell on this one too much. And you really have to refocus and get ready for New York and then Washington and Colorado next week. But, yeah, this isn't one I think that you're going to be too proud of.
No, there was nothing about the Jets game last night, Dave, that you would point to as saying, this is how we want it to look. Top to bottom, they were slow. They were sluggish. That was the description that was used by Paul Maurice. It was used by Blake Wheeler and Tyler Myers and Mark Scheifele. They know that they just didn't look like they had anything in their legs. They haven't played a lot of hockey over the past month, and you wonder if that's beginning, at least last night, maybe that affected them, the amount of time they had off. The Blues were the more desperate of the two teams. The Blues definitely needed the win more than the Jets did, simply by the way the standings were, and the Jets just looked flat all game long last night, Dave.
Yeah, I thought so. And I thought, three of the goals were really miscommunication. The three of the Blues goals were miscommunications by the Jets. And like, as he touched on that first one, I mean, Wheeler, you could just see his feet got tangled by himself almost. And then he made a bad pass to Myers, who then made a bad pass to Morrissey. And then, of course, it went to Steen, who passes it over to Tarasenko. And that's the one guy you don't want to have loose in front of your goalie, who buries it up top on Connor Hellebuyck. And then there was, I think it was the Alexander Steen goal, the third Blues goal, where he passed it. Myers had control of the puck in the Jets zone, and rather than dumping it, just getting into the neutral zone, he tried to bring it deeper into the Jets zone, ends up coughing up the puck, and they turn around and score. And then on the, I think it was the Tarasenko's second goal,
the one that bounced.
Dmitry Kulikov has the puck in the Jets zone. Mm-hmm. And again, it's another instance of just not being quick, and he just played with it for an extra second or two. But again, the Blues were on them. Their gaps were excellent, and they controlled the puck, got it over, and then again, Tarasenko scores. So, I just thought the Blues were probably played the better game. It's not so much what the Jets weren't able to do. I thought the Blues were very good. And one thing we need to talk about is Jaden Schwartz. I thought Jaden Schwartz was excellent last night, and I thought his return for the Blues is definitely a difference maker.
And Dave, St. Louis's fourth goal, I mean, let's be honest. I agree, the Jets don't clear the zone. But, I mean, it just takes a fortuitous bounce, and Tarasenko's there. He's the one guy on the team that you don't want to be right at the side of the net, and Hellebuyck just doesn't get over quick enough. But, I mean, it's a hard save to make if you're Hellebuyck. It takes, a lucky bounce, and Tarasenko roofs it. So I don't think you're going to blame Hellebuyck on that goal, and I don't think you're really going to blame Hellebuyck on any of the four goals. Obviously, the fifth goal we're not counting. But, the Blues are a good team, and, I said this on Wednesday's show. The Blues were sitting 6 points back of the Jets, but now they've won two games in a row, and they're only 2 points behind the Jets.
Yeah.
So you can say whatever you want about this Blues team, and I do believe the Jets and the Predators are the two best teams in the Western Conference and the Central Division. But I thought they looked really good yesterday, and I agree, they played like a desperate team, and they took advantage of miscues by the Jets, and they didn't let a lack of rest affect them yesterday. They got in late Friday night. But they didn't look like a slow team last night. And, even when Patrick Laine, brought the Jets within one goal, I mean, the Blues responded, what was it, a minute later?
Yeah,
with Tarasenko's goal.
Less than a minute,
on the topic of the Lions, I mean, Mark Scheifele, I realize, everyone was talking about, Scheifele's return, and we should be. But, I mean, I didn't think it was until Matthew Perreault was moved up to the top line that line started to click. And obviously, on the power play, Laine gets the goal. But I thought, they were generating more at 5-on-5. And I think that Patrick Laine looked, more confident, reunited with Brian Little and Nikolaj Ehlers. So you wonder if Maurice kind of goes back to those lines and keeps Perreault up on that top line.
Well, we'll talk more about the lines next segment as we look forward to the few games that are coming up this coming week. I think you make a good point. The St. Louis Blues are a very good hockey team. And I think for whatever reason, people haven't seen them since December. Since the back-to-back two games in December where the Jets handled them on home ice. And the Jets have been ahead of them in the standings consistently since then, or, for the majority of the season,
But the Blues have been right up there the whole year.
Well,
I mean, it's only the last kind of month or so that they've fallen off, but they've been firmly in a playoff spot for most of the year.
Take the St. Louis Blues team that you saw yesterday, which is pretty much at full strength. I mean, obviously Robbie Fabry's done for the year, and they didn't have Robert Bertuzzo in the lineup yesterday. So take, or Joel Edmondson, pardon me, in the lineup yesterday. So take that St. Louis Blues team you saw yesterday, give them an addition at the trade deadline, because I think they are going to be somebody who adds a winger probably at the trade deadline, something just to increase their wing depth and the wing scoring that they have.
They might add a defenseman, too.
They could add a defenseman.
Yeah.
But their defense is deep. Jake Allen is...
How good did Alex Pietrangelo look last night? I mean, Alex Pietrangelo looked like not just a top 10 defenseman last night. He looked like a top 5 defenseman in the league last night.
Look how good he was through the first, you know, through the 2017 portion of the season.
Yeah.
You know, it's only been... He's only dropped off... You know, in the last, let's say, 6 to 8 weeks, he's dropped off a bit. Before that, he looked like he was the early leader in the clubhouse for the Norris Trophy at the start of the year.
He was on the ice for half of the game last night. I don't know exactly what his ice time is. It was something like 26, 27 minutes. He was fantastic. I thought, you know, he was very exceptional for the Blues last night.
27-40 for Alex Pietrangelo last night. If the NHL wasn't, if the NHL was at the Olympics, he would be at the Olympics for Team Canada.
Yep.
I mean, there's no question about that. He would be a quote unquote Olympian. This St. Louis Blues team is a very good hockey team that people, I think, for whatever reason, have maybe overlooked a
not
little
me.
Bit. Not you, but other people.
I'm not saying they're going to win the Cup. I'm just saying, I mean, whoever plays them in the first round, whether it's the Jets, whether it's the Predators, whether it's the Stars, I mean, they're not an easy out.
They're certainly not. They're a coin flip, I would suggest, as to who's going to win a series like that. You take that Blues team with, if Jake Allen is solid in net, and he has been... He hasn't been great all season long, but he tends to get better as the season goes on.
But Drew, we talked about it on Wednesday show. What has been the biggest criticism of the Blues this year? It's been their lack of goal scoring. They've scored 11 goals in the last two games
against two Central Division rivals.
Exactly.
Against teams that are you know, they're chasing or are right behind the Blues in the standing. So this is a very dangerous St. Louis Blues team that I think will only get more dangerous as we sit here 16 days away from the NHL trade deadline, because I think they're going to add a quality piece, and whoa, then look out. This Blues team is, you know, they were a second round team last year. They dispatched the Minnesota Wild in the first round without a lot of effort. So, you know, as much as I agree with you, Ezzy, that it's the Jets and the Predators, it's not like there's a big gap between the Jets and the Predators and then the Blues. Dave, you were gonna?
No, I was gonna say that they were also at post game, if you listen to some of the Blues guys speaking, especially Jake Allen was talking about how they were incentivized by Coach Yeo to really kind of get up for the Jets. They talked about how the Jets have had their number. And, you know, I think the Jets had won prior to last night. It was 6 of 7 games against St. Louis. So
the loss in the Jets, the shutout loss in St. Louis back on that Saturday in December.
Right, but other than that, but all of last season the Jets dominated them. So the point was that I'm assuming is what the message was that if we want to be they came out wanting to win that game. And obviously, most teams obviously come out wanting to win a game. But I think that there was just an extra bit of jump in their step or a little bit more motivation to kind of say, you know, you guys have pushed us around. You know, we're not going to allow that to continue. So it seemed to be the mantra for the Blues team when they took to the ice and for the full 60 minutes, I would say.
Yeah, certainly a bit of a flat effort for the Jets last night. The lines were all shuffled around, but then they got shuffled again in the middle of the game. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets' forward lines. How do we envision them going forward? They have another battle tomorrow afternoon against the New York Rangers, so not a lot of time for the Jets to dwell on last night's defeat. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Much more on the Jets coming up next.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, your home of the Winnipeg Jets. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Last night we saw the brief debut of some new forward lines for the Winnipeg Jets. I say brief because, well, they didn't really last more than half the game. At the start, it was Patrick Laine alongside Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. Scheifele and Wheeler back together, the dynamic duo, of course. Scheifele coming off the injured list. Matthew Perreault was playing with Brian Little and Nikolai Ehlers. Then the bottom two lines, you had Kyle Connor, Andrew Kopp, and Joel Armia. Marco Dano, Nick Patan, and Jack Roslovic. Let's focus our attention on the top two lines, guys, because Paul Maurice certainly didn't stick with that Line A, Scheifele, Wheeler line for long at all. Are you surprised at how quickly he decided to toss things around?
Yeah, you saw the first two periods, Laine, Scheifele, and Ehlers. Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler stick together, and then you had Perreault and Laine flip-flop there on the left wings. I'm not that surprised because of how they played during that game. I mean, let's be honest, guys, the top two lines weren't generating enough offensively in the first two periods, and that's why I wouldn't be surprised if you see Matthew Perreault stay up on that first line. I mentioned that during the first segment, and that's because, guys, Matty Perreault seems to be, you know, a solid contributor on whatever line he's on. He almost drives lines at times, even though on that top line, we know who drives the bus. It's Blake Wheeler who drives the offensive bus for the Jets on that top line pretty much every game, maybe not last night. So, I thought the best line for the Jets last night was Andrew Copp, Joel Armia, and Kyle Connor. And we talked about it. I mean, the Connor and Copp had two excellent grade-A scoring chances in the first period. They're not able to bury it. And then, obviously, you know, Kyle Connor gets the Jets on the board there off of some nice work from Jack Roslovic, fighting off Braden Schenn in the corner. We know that Roslovic and Connor have that familiarity together from the American Hockey League. So you wonder, you know, if maybe Connor and Roslovic get paired up together on Sunday against the Rangers. But it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I also think there's a good chance Brendan Lemieux goes into the game. Marco Dano only played 6 minutes last night against the Blues. So, you know, I think that there is, a lot of different permutations here for Paul Maurice. But I think, you know, considering that he likes to keep pairs together, I don't think that there's any chance that he breaks up Scheifele or Wheeler, or he breaks up Little or Ehlers. And based on the way Kyle Connor, Andrew Copp, and Joel Armia played, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that third line stays intact. You kind of saw Kyle Connor double shifted there last night, Dave. At times he was on the third line, and then you saw him, you know, play with Patan and Roslovic at times. So it's going to be interesting to see what Paul Maurice does. But, you know, Laine, Scheifele, Wheeler, that's the super line, Drew, that everyone, you know, has wanted to see for so long. But, you know, it hasn't had any sustained success. So you know that Perreault has played with Scheifele and Wheeler before, and you know that Laine has played alongside Little and Ehlers before, so maybe you go back to that. But we'll have to wait and see. But there's definitely, you know, I think some changes coming to those forward lines, because last night's game was won at 5-on-5. The Jets scored a power play goal, but the Blues only had two power play opportunities. And for me, that was a game where, you know, they had to create more offensively at even strength, Dave, and they didn't do that. So that's why I wouldn't be surprised if Laine gets bumped down to the second line for Sunday's game.
We've heard so much, Dave, in the last couple weeks, maybe not even that length of time, but how well the Perreault, Little, and Ehlers line had been playing together and how they'd been dominating possession and they'd been dominating their opponent. Murat Ateş of The Athletic is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. He wrote about how great that line has been playing. What do you think about the fact that that line has now been broken up after really half a game of seeing Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler together? Was Paul Maurice maybe a little too quick on that trigger, especially when you have a guy like Scheifele playing his first game in 16 games after being on the IR? Do you think maybe they just needed a little more time to see if they can develop that chemistry?
Well, I mean, again, the Jets are practicing today at noon, so we'll see how permanent those line changes are, because he may just go back to them today. And it's, you know, it's a coaching thing. It's an instinct game, right? So sometimes you look at a player and you're thinking, he doesn't have it tonight. What can I do to get? And we, as we all know and as we've talked about for years, Matthew Perreault is the kind of player who really just kind of bring whatever line he goes into, he just brings it up. He increases the benefit to that line. So, you know, he sees Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, and they're not contributing in a major way to the game last night. So maybe he just thinks, okay, I'll put Perreault on there, but okay, we weren't able to get really anything doing. I'll go back to what were my existing lines. It's hard to say. The interesting thing to me is the fact that they're really keeping Roslovic on the wing as opposed to center, because Nick Batan and Jack Roslovic are playing together now, obviously, on that fourth line. And if you look at what they did in the AHL all season, Jack Roslovic has been the center and Nick Batan has been the winger. I mean, occasionally they've both been the winger on that first line for the Manitoba Moose, but primarily since November, it's been Jack Roslovic as the center, Nick Patan as the winger. So it just goes to show you, in my mind, the Jets really want to have Roslovic as an option on the wing as opposed to having him as a center because of their center depth. So it, to me, I don't know, like, it's funny, I think Jack Roslovic is a really good center. So I think that, you know, he's the kind of player who you'd want to have in that position, but you know, it's an interesting move since he hasn't played center. He's been playing center primarily, you know, with the exception of about 10 games with the Moose.
And you can see why Maurice is using Roslovic on the wing. He's never played center at the NHL level, right? So Nick Petan has played center at the NHL level, but I agree with Dave. I mean, I think Roslovic is more effective at center, and to Dave's point, you know, he has played on the wing for the Manitoba Moose, but you know, you wonder maybe if Maurice looks at moving Roslovic to the middle. They have to do something with those bottom two lines because Lowry, Hendricks, Tanev, they're not playing Sunday. I mean, it's not going to be until next week until they get these players back, right? So you have to get something going there on that fourth line. The third line was great. I mean, you look at the possession numbers, and, you know, that was a great line. Kyle Connor, Andrew Kopp, Joel Armia. So yeah, I would keep that line together. But for me, you know, the other lines, they need tweaking.
Well, you know, you mentioned, Dave, and I'm glad you brought up the Petan at center and Roslovic on the wing on that fourth line. If they're more used to playing, I mean, right now they're playing against fourth line competition primarily because the Jets are getting the matchups they want, mm-hmm. given that they're at home. And if they're used to playing with Roslovic primarily up the middle and Petan on the wing, I'm not sure. I get that, you know, they want Roslovic probably to stay in the Jets lineup as a winger once they're back to full health or close to full health. But right now, if you've had success with Roslovic up the middle and Petan at the wing at the AHL level, I don't know why you don't stick with that, at least while that duo is playing together in that fourth line role for the Jets. It seems like you're flipping things around unnecessarily in that instance.
Yeah, I agree, Drew, but I wanted to go back to that top line, and, you know, I think that there is a future for Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler. I really do, but for me, it lacks a little bit of speed, mm-hmm. and it kind of lacked a little bit of chemistry as well, and I think as soon as Matthew Perreault went up there, I mean, let's be honest, I mean, Matthew Perreault is a speedy guy, and for a small guy, he's a guy that gets in on the forecheck, and I think at times, you know, Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler, they're almost kind of deferring to each other too much, and they're almost looking for, you know, that cute pass or trying to make that extra play, and don't get me wrong, I think Scheifele and Wheeler are going to be much better Sunday. Like, I wouldn't expect anything but that, Dave. I'd expect them, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they each score two goals on Sunday versus the Rangers because they know they didn't play very well. But I think Perreault adds a dynamic to that line that Laine doesn't. And, you know, I think oftentimes, you know, fans look at, you know, the three most talented players, and those three are the most talented on the team with the exception of, you know, Nikolaj Ehlers, I would also throw into that mix there. But just because they're the three most talented players doesn't mean they form the greatest line.
It seems, and that, now this isn't a criticism, but it seems like Patrick Laine might be a lot of his colleagues or his teammates might have problems playing with Patrick Laine. It seems like he's a little bit more of a difficult player to play with than some of the other top six forwards that the Jets have, that getting chemistry with him might be a little bit more difficult than a guy like Matthew Perreault or a guy like Nikolaj Ehlers, for whatever reason.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but I think that, you know, when you look at, you know, the most successful wingers on that line, the left wingers on that line, for me, it's been Matthew Perreault and it's been Kyle Connor.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, you know, Little, Ehlers, and Laine, even though they struggled earlier in the season at 5-on-5, as the season has progressed, that line has gotten better. I mean, I personally like Laine and Ehlers together on a line.
Just they seem to have so much chemistry, be it on the ice, off the ice, as we've seen that. And they've played enough
minutes. And they can both play, you know, their off wing. Sure. So it doesn't really matter, you know, if you use Laine on the left wing or the right wing, same thing goes for Ehlers. Well, and you know what you're going to get out of Brian Little. So
I was watching the broadcast last night. You guys were, of course, at the game. I was at home watching it. And they mentioned on the broadcast, I think it was Dennis who said it, or might have been Kevin Sawyer on Color, who said that, you know, entering the game last night, Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler had played, I think, something like 5 minutes together all season long as a line. So it's no surprise, really, to me, if they've only played 5 minutes together, that they might not have the chemistry necessary. Now, it's, you know, unfortunate that last night, or the reality of the situation is last night, they were playing against a very good team.
Right.
In the St. Louis Blues. And if the Blues...
And it was Scheifele's first game back in a month and a half.
Exactly. Yeah. And Wheeler was back on the right wing for the first time in six weeks and everything else. It seems like it shouldn't be a surprise that the Laine, Scheifele, Wheeler line has had some struggles last night, given the layers of complexity, let's say, that were put into the game with putting them all together last night.
Right, and it doesn't mean that Laine and Wheeler aren't great players. I mean, they are the Jets' two best players when it comes to producing offense, but the chemistry between Scheifele and Wheeler, it's just not the same between Laine and Wheeler. And that's why, you know, I would expect Paul Maurice, you know, to look at having someone else on that left side on the first line. But again, it doesn't necessarily mean that we won't see Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler in the future. It just means that as of right now, I mean, they're looking for that right mix to produce offense.
You're absolutely right. And of course, as Dave mentioned, the Jets will practice today at 12 noon at Bell MTS Place. And we'll have all the latest news and audio from Jets practice available on our website, illegalcurve.com. You can also, of course, follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve for all your latest Jets and Manitoba Moose news. Should make note of the Moose. We'll talk about the Moose in the third hour of today's program. Victory last night, Dave, in Cleveland?
Yep.
In Cleveland. So they have another game on their road trip.
Last Sunday afternoon
in Cleveland, they play the rematch against the Cleveland Monsters?
Yes.
It used to be the Lake Erie Monsters?
Yeah, I missed this last time. Yes.
I know. I don't like when teams change their name. I'm not very smart and it confuses me.
Yeah.
When we come back, Murat Ateş makes his debut on the program. You know Murat from his work on theathletic.com. He's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290. These standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, making his debut on the program from theathletic.com here in Winnipeg, Murat Ateş joins us. Murat, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
I've been a
fan for a little while, and it seems AHL, NHL, if it's happening in Winnipeg, it seems Illegal Curve has it, so I'm excited to be here today.
Well, we appreciate your kind words. We'll have a discussion off-air about why you've only been a fan for a little while and not a long while, but that's a separate issue for another day and time, clearly.
Yeah, we'll take the gloves off another time.
Murat, well, obviously brought you on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets and some of the great work you've been doing for theathletic.com. And, you know, we spent a fair chunk of the first 30 minutes of or so of the program talking about the Jets' forward lines and, you know, how Paul Maurice sort of deployed them yesterday. It started the game with Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler, and then that second line that has been performing so admirably with Perreault, Little, and Ehlers. The lines didn't last long, as they quickly got jumbled as the game went underway. Your thoughts about, you know, Paul Maurice not sticking with the Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler line. Do you sort of agree with that decision that he made, or do you think that, you know, he should have given them more time to gel during that game last night, given it's Wheeler's first game on the right side in 16 and it's Scheifele's first game back in the lineup in 16?
Yeah, I don't mind the line juggling so much. One thing that I've kind of admired is relative to other coaches in the NHL. Paul Maurice pulls up the blender slightly less often than other teams do. And it seems to me he reserves it for third period situations just like last night where nothing's really going particularly well. Had things been a little bit better on the scoreboard, I'm sure he would have left things as he drew them up in the morning after the skate. With Perreault switching spots with Laine heading into the third, we were talking, or he was asked about it after the game, and Marie said it gave the first line some hop, but it really didn't change the flow of the game. And so moving forward, I'm not going to read too much into it. I don't expect that those switches are going to stay past last night's disappointing third period.
And Murat, I know Dave wants to ask you about your article that was written earlier this week about Perreault, Little, and Ehlers. I wanted to ask you about zone entries, and I know you wrote about that recently, and it's no surprise to anybody that Nikolai Ehlers leads the way as far as zone entries go. He's the fastest guy on the team, maybe the most dynamic player on the team. But were you surprised at who was number two on that list?
I was shocked at who was number two on the list. In terms of permitted zone entries with possession on the Winnipeg Jets, first is Ehlers, second is Andrew Kopp. And that's not something I expected. 2 weeks ago, I was talking to him about his work with Lowry when healthy, and he was telling me about how much he insists on keeping it simple through the neutral zone, that line doesn't do anything fancy, no curving routes like an Ehlers might run. But to see that in terms of gaining the line with possession successfully, that Andrew Kopp is one of the best, I was shocked. And then last night I saw that pass he made to Connor on a lovely 2-on-2 that ended with a kind of a failed spinorama, and I began to wonder, maybe there's something there.
Now, Murat, you wrote about the new top line for Winnipeg, which was Perreault, Little, Ehlers, and how they've become a dominant trio. So what was it about those three that have kind of formed that gel and really allowed them to become so dominant in the NHL?
I think that one of the things that came out when I was talking to them was sort of their commitment to working and their commitment to learning. And that started with Matthew Perreault, who was telling me that when he broke into the NHL, he was considered himself a high skill player, had the puck on his stick all the time in junior, and he really didn't know much about tracking it down and getting it back. But right now he strikes me as Winnipeg's best forechecker when he's cutting somebody down in the offensive zone who has the puck. He takes a perfect line. His stick is in the perfect place. He's got amazing hand-eye in terms of picking things off. And he's not afraid to let the body on guys much bigger than himself and take them down, being a relatively small guy in the NHL. His commitment to add that to his game over the years, since he was a fourth-line guy trying to find his way in Washington, really stood out. And I asked Nikolai Ehlers something as well on the topic of what he had learned. And it was about what he knows now that he didn't necessarily know in his rookie season. And he was telling me about how the intensity of the NHL ramps up kind of in quarters, he was saying. First 20 games, second 20 games, et cetera. And how when he first got into the NHL, he didn't realize that people were going to be getting better and better and better throughout the season, and how he had to elevate his game to stay with them. So if you can imagine it, Nikolai Ehlers perceives himself ramping up the effort even more as the season goes on from what we've already seen from him. And then Brian Little's commitment to communication, he said that was one of the things that they were working on as a line. Actually, they all said that. The three of them are high skill. The three of them can forecheck well, and Ehlers can fly through the neutral zone. He seems to be able to get the zone on command. And I do talk a lot about zone entries, and it's because I think that zone entries' contributions to a team's scoring chances and possession, I couldn't possibly overstate it. It really helps to get through the neutral zone smoothly. And that's one of the things that I think deserted the team as a whole against St. Louis last night, and one of the reasons that they lost. They weren't skating through the neutral zone so well.
No, certainly the Blues did a great job of neutralizing the Jets' speed last night and not letting them get going through the neutral zone. Murat Atesh from TheAthletic.com joins us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Winnipeg Jets. And Murat, one of the great turnarounds of the Jets' season has been the penalty kill. For the last couple of years, the penalty kill has been bottom five in the NHL. The team has been taking too many penalties and then not doing a good enough job killing off those penalties. This year, they've cut down in the number of penalties taken significantly, and they've been better at killing those penalties. Obviously there's a correlation between the two, but from your perspective, what has made the Jets' penalty kill so successful this season?
Well, it's interesting because about 2 months into the season, I wrote a pretty critical piece about the penalty kill. At the time, it was giving up the most shot attempts per minute and the most high danger scoring chances per minute in the NHL. And I was a little bit critical about sort of the passive nature of it, with two guys down low and that sort of forward stack. I've heard it called a T, I've heard it called a J as well, but one forward in the slot and one forward a little bit above that who rotates and covers off the passes at the top of the zone. I was really critical in the amount of time and space that they gave players on the half wall at the point and then on the other side of the half wall as well. I thought it became a little bit of a shooting gallery. But about a couple of weeks into December, if you split the Jets penalty killing season roughly in half between mid-December and now, all of a sudden you see a lot of the exact same players playing the same system with just a touch more aggression and a touch better reads, which I think comes from experience within the system. the exact same guys are giving up less chances per minute, less high danger chances per minute, less shot attempts per minute. Lowry and Kopp giving roughly half as much up in the second half of the penalty kill season as in the first, and that sort of goes throughout the lineup. Why that's happening is, to my way of thinking, them getting comfortable with the system and adding a couple of wrinkles like better zone entry prevention and just a little bit more aggression stopping people from shots. It's still relatively passive, but the high-quality chances have gone down and the results have gone way up. And then I have to add, the most important penalty killer, of course, is Connor Hellebuyck, and he's done a phenomenal job. His save percentage in the PK situation is really high-end. Some people in the math community might suggest that it will come down a little bit as time goes by, but it's within reasonable as far as high goes. So I'm willing to settle on Connor Hellebuck's played great, and it's been a big part of that.
And Murat, to go back to that top line of the Jets yesterday, or I guess, you know, if we're calling Brian Little's line maybe the top line, the Scheifele-Wheeler-Lyon-A line, it was clear last night that they weren't generating enough at 5-on-5 as far as shot attempts go. Is it maybe for you a lack of speed when it comes to Patrick Laine, or for you, what do the numbers say about why that line maybe won't work going forward?
You know, I'm actually optimistic about that trio. Historically, Ben, by which I mean last season and this season, because Patrick Laine is in his second season, he's had really good results with Mark Scheifele there. Well over 50% in shot attempts, well over 50% in the goals for, and almost dominant in terms of the goals for that they've had together, no matter who the third person on their line has been. And the reason I like that as a duo, other than that everybody's a high-end player on that line, I'd also like Mark Scheifele coming in through the middle of the ice with the puck on his forehand. He's a right-handed shot. And if Patrick Laine is on the left side of the ice, he's also a right-handed shot, he's very open for a one-time pass. And if he's at the right side of the ice, well, that's his home as well. I think he can go on either wing, and as long as Mark Scheifele and his vision and his passing is on that line, I think things are going to go well for them moving forward. Last night, I really didn't like what I saw through the neutral zone, and it's sort of from the very first shift, there was a failed breakout by those guys that I think when Mark Scheifele has got his legs back under him, doesn't really happen, but there were some missed connections down low on some passes, and then later in the game, there were some missed connections in the neutral zone. So I think they will figure each other out. I think that will come back, but last night they didn't spend nearly enough time in the offensive zone, and I think that starts in their end breaking out, and they sort of missed each other on a lot of those short passes.
And Murat, like you said, it's one game, right, too, and Laine and Scheifele have had some success, so it doesn't necessarily mean that Maurice is going to break up that line.
Yeah, I really have been seeing him pull out the blender when things are going quite poorly and then sort of revert to his original lineup as he had it. So I wouldn't be surprised if on Sunday those three guys are back together and play a terrific game.
Murat, what do you think of the Patan-Roslovic combo on the fourth line?
I love watching it. I become kind of a giddy fan when that line comes out. I've been a fan just strategically of having high skill guys on your fourth line for a long time, and I've written to that effect. But with that duo, I guess coming up with chemistry developed on the Moose, they really buzz in the offensive zone, and surely they're not getting major minutes right now. And there's an army of tweeters on the internet who would certainly love to see more, especially more minutes for Patan. I just think that in the modern NHL, having fourth line players who can play at high skill and who are responsible all through the ice, even if their reputation isn't as checkers, like Jack Roslovic can track back and cover with the best of them. That's too soon, but I think that's actually a career path that he enjoys, because I already see him making very, very smart reads. And Patan being center on that line has done well, too. They've created already in their two games, or Patan has in his two games so far with his call-up. I just strategically am such a big fan of that high skill, so every time they go out onto the ice, I really quite enjoy it.
Well, they can only hope to finally achieve the high skill that we saw from Chris Thorburn making yet another return to the Jets, to the Winnipeg Arena or the Bell MTS Place last night. Murat Atesh covers the Winnipeg Jets for theathletic.com. Murat, thanks for joining us this morning and welcome to the program.
Thanks very much for having me on. Thanks,
we'll do it again soon. Take care, Murat. When we come back, we're going to preview the Jets and the Rangers. They're doing battle tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock at Bell MTS Place. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Kudos to Jeff Gorton and management of the New York Rangers, because how do you think that conversation went in telling Slats, who then has to tell ownership,
Mr.
you know,
Dolan.
Yeah, tell the Dolan family that, oh yeah, by the way, we're going to blow this thing up, and you're not going to get the home dates that you otherwise might get and the tens of millions that goes along with that.
TSN's hockey insiders Darren Dreger and Bob McKenzie addressing the situation surrounding the New York Rangers. Earlier this week, they sent an interesting letter to their season ticket holders, basically saying, we're throwing in the towel on this season. The roster is going to change. We're going to trade most of your familiar faces, or possibly trade most of the familiar faces. As we know, this team is not good enough in the long run to be legitimate Stanley Cup contenders, treating their fan base with maturity, an interesting tactic in this day and age. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Rangers, of course, into Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon to play the Winnipeg Jets. It was scheduled, or quite possibly scheduled, to be the return of Andre Pavlik, but he went out with an injury last night in the Rangers' victory over the Calgary Flames. No word on how serious that injury is, if he's indeed going to travel to Winnipeg or not, but just a note for those Pavlik fans and or Pavlik haters who thought they might have an opportunity tomorrow at Bell MTS Place to voice their displeasure. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, Drew, I want to go back, you know, to this notion of Rangers management telling, you know, their fans and other owners that they might blow it up. You know, I kind of have a different opinion than Dreger. I don't really agree with him. It's very bizarre.
Go on.
When do you ever see a general manager of a team that's still in the playoff hunt say that we're going to blow it up? Find me one general manager that's done that.
The closest comparison I can give you, and this is going way back and it's on a different sport altogether. It was, if I recall correctly, it was Major League Baseball. The Chicago White Sox were 3.5 games out of, I don't remember if it was the wild card race or the Central Division pennant race. And at the trade deadline, they traded two or three of their key players because the general manager basically came out and said, yes, we're close, but we realistically know that we're not good enough to catch the team that we're chasing.
What kind of message does that send to your players, though?
Well, I mean, isn't it...
I'm talking about the players that aren't going to be traded. I'm talking about the players that are fighting for a playoff spot. Like, you're basically saying that we're mailing it in.
Well,
that's what you're saying. You're saying, you know, maybe we'll make the playoffs, but even if we do make the playoffs, we're probably not going to go on a far run. Like, maybe it's just me, but for a general manager in the NHL, 2 weeks before the trade deadline, when you're still in the playoff race, it's not like the Rangers are 15 points out of a playoff spot. What are they, 3 points out?
They
can still make the playoffs.
The Rangers are 3 points behind the New York Islanders.
There you go.
They have a game in hand. They have two teams between them and the Islanders, the Blue Jackets and the Hurricanes.
But the point is they're in it. They're very much in it. You can't tell me that the Rangers aren't in the playoff race. 3 points, that's a couple wins.
Yes, I mean, they are in it based on these standings. I think the flip side to the argument...
Well, they're just as in it as the Islanders are.
Sure. The flip side to
or
the...
Or any of those other teams you mentioned.
The flip side to the argument would be that they have... I mean, they're talking about their pending UFAs in Rick Nash and Michael Grabner.
Yeah, but see... All the GMs across the NHL know that already.
Right.
So why do you have to come out and publicly say it is my point. Like, everyone knows that the Rangers are looking to move certain players. I mean, look, the insiders have been talking about it for a month now.
Sure.
I just don't know why you have to publicly come out and say, you know, there's a for sale sign on the front lawn.
Well, I mean, maybe they're – what about the argument, Ezzy, that the Rangers are – I mean, you look at the Rangers team, and realistically, they're not – if they were to squeak into the playoffs, they're not a team that's going to – I can't even see them winning one round. And
I don't necessarily agree with that. I'm not saying that the Rangers are a cup contender. As far as I'm concerned, Tampa Bay's the best team in the East.
Yeah.
I'd put Toronto up there. I think Tampa Bay is a little ahead of the Bruins and the Leafs.
Sure.
And, you know, you can never count out Pittsburgh. I mean, Washington's a pretty good team. There's four or five teams that I would say are elite in the Eastern Conference. So I'm not saying that I think the Rangers are going to go on a long playoff run, but you've got great goaltending. You've got Henrik Lundqvist, and we know all you have to do is get in. We've said that time and time again. So again, don't get me wrong, Drew. I'm not saying that the Rangers, they might not even make the playoffs. It's very bizarre to me again that you're in the middle of a playoff race. You still have over 2 weeks to go before the trade deadline, and you go out there in public and issue a statement and say, "Yep, we're going to get rid of some players." You want Rick Nash? Yeah, you can have Rick Nash. You want Matt Zuccarello? Yeah, we'll probably move him. It's very bizarre for a GM. Again, find me another NHL general manager that's done that in a similar position prior to the trade deadline. I don't remember an NHL general manager ever doing this.
You make valid points there, Ezzy, and you're certainly entitled to your opinion. And I think you make a strong case for your opinion there. And I think other people who would be listening would say, on the flip side, this is the case of a general manager talking to their fan base and treating their fan base with appropriate levels of respect.
Doesn't the fan base want the Rangers to make the playoffs?
Of course, but the fan base also...
Can't you trade Rick Nash and still make the playoffs?
Probably. But I think what you have here is you have a general manager telling the fan base, we acknowledge that we are not good enough, and we are going to...
Why would you ever acknowledge that you're not good enough?
Well, because...
At this point in the season, when you're 3 points out of a playoff spot.
Well, because at least you're being realistic about how you feel about your team. I mean, look at the complaints
They won last night. I mean,
I know, but look at the complaints they've had in Vancouver for the last 3 years, let's say, Dave, and we'll get you in on this. The complaints they've had in Vancouver for the past 3 or 4 years since Jim Benning has been in charge there is that he continues to make these moves that are not reflective of truly how the fan base and how the league perceives the Canucks at how skilled they are. He goes out and he signs Louis Erickson. Why does he sign Louis Erickson? No one's quite sure. He's not a difference maker. They're not good enough to win with Louis Erickson, never mind without Louis Erickson. He goes out and makes these sort of shuffling the deck chair moves that prevent the team from truly bottoming out to get to where they need to be in order to begin the uphill climb.
Hey, I'll listen to that, but the Canucks aren't in a playoff race right now.
Well,
the Rangers are.
I think the Rangers general, I know they are statistically and based on the standings, but I guess their general manager is saying, look, we might be there based on the numbers because in this day and age
in
the NHL.
Well, what else is it based on? I mean, it's based on points.
I mean, I know.
The point is, Drew, is that they're there. I mean, they could be a playoff team. And again, it's going to be tough. That Metropolitan Division is very tight. And we know that most likely there are only going to be three teams that make it from the Atlantic. So, I mean, you have to beat out a couple of other teams, the Flyers, the Devils. I'm just saying, for me, we all knew that the Rangers were probably going to be sellers already. That's my point. We already knew that. So why does Jeff Gorton have to come out publicly and say we're sellers?
What does he gain by coming out?
It's obvious. Everybody knows Nash is available. Everybody knows Grabner's available. He's not. What's new there?
It's a valid point you make, Dave. Your thoughts on Ezzy's argument versus?
No, I think it's a very unusual move to wave the white flag the way they seem to be doing. Doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense, because one way of looking at it is you could say, well, it's just his way of sending a message to all the 30 other general managers saying, you know, we're open for business. But the reality is you pick up the phone and you do that. You don't really, I mean, to me, I don't see the reason why you would do that at this point in the season, because as Ezzy just illustrated, they're not that far out. And regardless of how you feel you're going to do, I mean, what message does that send to the team? What message does it send to the fans?
Well, that's my whole point. I mean, Jeff Gorton and Glenn Sather and, you know, Chris Drury and the brain trust there, they might be thinking this behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm. But why come out
and say this to the public? That's my point.
What's
I don't buy that, you know, you're being honest with your fans. I think Rangers fans want this team to make make the playoffs, even if they're not going to win the Stanley Cup this year.
I don't think the two things are mutually exclusive, though. I think Rangers fans can want the team to make the playoffs at the same time as acknowledging that the team is not good enough as currently constructed.
But you're acknowledging that by making the moves. You don't need to say that to the public. That's what my point is.
You don't need to pour
is.
Gasoline onto it?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. You're waving the white flag. You're pouring gasoline on a fire that's already lit.
Well, maybe you create a nobody believes in us attitude. I mean, you saw it from the Philadelphia...
Including our management.
Well, but I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles, nobody believed in the Philadelphia Eagles when the playoffs started, and now we call them Super Bowl champions. So maybe you're putting a bit of a chip on the shoulder of the rest of the guys who end up staying in the locker room in New York. I mean, they made additional moves.
That's a very dangerous play, though, because sure. You can create a lot of resentment within the organization.
Well, they made some additional moves yesterday. It wasn't just, you know, lip service. They put Brendan Smith on waivers, and they signed him to a contract extension this offseason. They gave him a four-year extension this offseason, and they put him on waivers.
Yeah, well, they're just making moves now because you know bigger moves are coming. That's what they're doing.
Well, I mean, Brendan, they're saying that Jeff Gorton would, by placing Brendan Smith on waivers, is saying that was a bad decision on my part. He's admitting publicly that signing, you know, Brendan Smith to the contract extension was a fail on his part.
They're having no problems admitting things publicly.
Well, apparently not. Maybe it's accountability that they're now putting in place there. I'm not 100% sure. It's definitely an interesting decision by Rangers management, and they'll be in town tomorrow afternoon. They're coming off a victory against the Flames, so maybe they're going to play. I bet you they're going to play harder than you think after, you know, the management came out and waved the flag, maybe the team playing with a bit of a chip on their shoulder. When we come back, Dave Maloney, he's the Rangers radio analyst. We'll continue the conversation with him. We'll ask him about the team as they prepare to come into Winnipeg tomorrow to face your Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. You're listening to TSN 1290, Saturday morning here in Peg City, Winnipeg. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuka, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, that's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Dave Maloney. Dave is the New York Rangers radio analyst. The Rangers in town to Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon to play the Jets at Bell MTS Place. Dave, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. How are you guys doing?
Very well, Dave. How about yourself?
Good. No complaints.
That's
whatsoever. It's been a while since the Rangers had a win. They got one against Calgary last night. So for this moment, there's reasons to think life's going to march on.
There you go. It was a good win for the Rangers last night on home ice against the Flames. And, you know, it comes right on the heels of, as we were discussing in our previous segment, you know, Jeff Gorton, Glenn Sather, and Rangers management sort of releasing the letter stating that changes are going to be afoot to the team, that, you know, as currently constructed, we don't think we are a Stanley Cup caliber and or a legitimate playoff contender. We had a decent disagreement or a decent conversation about the letter in studio here. What were your thoughts when you saw the Rangers release that letter earlier in the week?
Well, I think from the get-go, I thought that the Rangers were really a bubble team at best come playoff time, and that goes back to the season started. And that there were a couple of pretty important holes in the lineup. When you go down the middle and then the blue line, how is the blue line going to shake out on the makeover? And so when you look at the roster realistically against the top teams, the real legitimate contenders, it was hard to conclude that they were going to be anything better than, to me, a bubble team. And, you know, that's a guy who's, you know, kind of lived and died with this franchise. So I think it was a pretty bold and honest kind of move by both Jeff Gorton and the president, Glenn Sather, to say, listen, we've watched this thing for 60 games, and it is a bit of a makeover that really began last June at the amateur draft when you traded Derek Stepan and Ogiranta to Arizona to kind of, you know, start stockpiling assets. And they hadn't drafted in the first round in 5 years and got themselves. So to me, that was the start. And so I was not terribly surprised that what we see is really what management sees. And I give them credit for setting saying this is what we see. And my father used to have an expression, you got to take the bull by the horns sometimes. And I think that's what they did. And I commend them for doing it.
You know, Dave, you know, sticking on the topic of the upcoming trade deadline, I think, you know, most people in the hockey world know that the Rangers could be moving, you know, Rick Nash, Michael Grabner, some other players. But, you know, you're close to the team. Is this affecting the Rangers at all, or are they, you know, continuing to go about their business?
Well, you can't help. You can't help having played in the league and done. Now, again, the deadline when I played mid-70s to the mid-80s certainly didn't have the scrutiny or, you know, talk radio wasn't a factor. And so it was a lot different then. But there was still a sense of kind of wondering if there was going to be a move or if you were going to be the one to be moved. So from that standpoint, there's no question when the management publicly says and your best player has been asked to submit a list, that there's going to be some trepidation in the locker room. But that being said, I think everybody understands it's a big business now. And, you know, the coach, Vigneault, has been extensively quoted as saying, listen, it's his job to coach and it's the player's job to play. And ultimately that's what it comes down to. And really when you look at it, the most comfortable time for most guys is actually when they do get on the ice. So there's no question. It's certainly not a locker room that's buzzing with excitement, thinking, "Boy, we've got a shot at the cup." But that being said, you've got to get out and do your job.
So, Dave, how do they sell it to a player like Henrik Lundqvist, who's signed for 3 more years? But you know, do they sell it as like we're just retooling, or is this a kind of full blown blow up? Because if they are, how are you going to convince a player like him, you know, that's something he wants to be a part of?
Well, first of all, I love the culture that, you know, if you can't convince yourself you want to be part of something that you've been part of. See, that's a little bit of a change, too, where listen, ultimately free agency has created a lot of wealth for the players and a lot of movement, a lot more say. Mm-hmm. But not everybody, I think when you log on to a team, you log on assuming that you're going to do whatever you can to help that team franchise win, and he's certainly done that. He has publicly said that he's in for wherever they head. This guy has been the most important player in this franchise. He's a New York City guy. I don't think there's any convincing that had to be done with Henrik Lundqvist. He's a very standright. He's more of an old-school guy in the way. He said, you know what? I've been drafted by this franchise. I've been financially compensated by this franchise quite well. I've lived and died with this franchise, and I'm going to continue to do that, and I think it's very admirable.
Dave Maloney is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave is the New York Rangers radio analyst. The Rangers into town tomorrow afternoon to face the Jets. Dave, Andrei Pavlik got the start in net for the Rangers last night against Calgary. Wasn't able to finish the game as he went out with an injury. And I see now that the Rangers have called up goaltender Alexander Georgiev from the Hartford mm-hmm. Wolfpack. I guess it's safe to say that Andrei Pavlik probably won't be in the Rangers net tomorrow afternoon, making his return to Winnipeg.
Yeah, I assume. I know they're practicing at noon and noon East Coast time before heading out to Winnipeg. So I don't know anything more than post game last night. It was to be reevaluated today, and obviously a move to bring yet another player up from Hartford would seem that Andre won't be available. So. Which I'm sure it was something that he was looking forward to. I'm not sure he was going to get the start anyway, given the fact that he got the start last night. But I know Winnipeg's been dealing with some injuries, and the Rangers have been also, and it looks like Pavlik's the latest casualty.
Dave, as you know, the Rangers have had some trouble scoring goals this year. For you, is Pavel Buchnevich may be one of the biggest bright spots for this team this year. You know, he's already up to 13 goals, 32 points on the season in his second pro year.
Yeah, he's been a nice, you know, he's been right what you'd hope a young guy could be. It's really, last year he dealt with a couple different injury issues. So he's really into his sophomore year, and he's 21 years old, and, you know, there's every indication that he's going to have a pretty decent decent career given the start. So, but I think, you know, I have to keep in mind there's a pretty big cultural difference for him coming from Russia, and that's both on and off the ice. He's come an awful long way. He's got a nice personality. So there are all kinds of things to think. But you know what? The Rangers got a, got some reason to think that Pavel Buchnevich is going to be a pretty good player.
You know, Dave, 8 months after signing Brendan Smith to a four-year deal worth $17.4 million, on Thursday they put him on waivers. What do you think went wrong for the defenseman this season?
Well, first of all, in this day and age, it's rare that a guy shows up at camp in less than top shape. And Brendan was one of them. I know he had a very busy summer, a lot of kind of weddings, and he got married himself and all these different things. But that being said, he got out of the gate a half a step behind and really never wasn't even close to the player that he was when he was acquired at the deadline from Detroit last spring. And that move probably surprised me more than the statements by Jeff Gorton and Glenn Sather. Not that it wasn't warranted, but that's a significant chunk of money invested in a veteran. But I also think, you know, it was another statement that this franchise has got a vision on where you're heading, and Brandon just his game at this particular point. Now, who's to say that he doesn't go to Hartford and become a little less high-risk player and become a valuable asset to the franchise or to someone else's franchise moving down the road? So I think it was just another shot over the bow by management to say we're not happy with what we're seeing, and Brandon Smith hasn't been good enough, and he's now in the American Hockey League.
With Dave Maloney, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave is a New York Rangers analyst. Dave, Chris Kreider, you know, is such a key member of this Rangers team, and he's been out of the lineup, of course, with the injury for the last little while. You know, how significant was his loss to the Rangers when we really sort of take a step back and evaluate the Rangers season? Can you point to the loss of Kreider as sort of being the tipping point that changed the Rangers season?
I would say I'm not 100% convinced that that would be the tipping point. There were some things that were kind of, you know, smelling a little bit prior to Kreider's injury. The thing with Chris Kreider, I was of the thought that it was long past where you should be looking at what Kreider could be or should be. What he is, was a really good player. And what he was and what he will continue to be, he's a top line, top six left winger who's going to get you 25 to 30 easily. And he might be the most intimidating forward from the standpoint if you got to know where he is physically. So while I wouldn't suggest that his exit was a tipping point, it was a very significant injury. No doubt. So when you want to play with speed and you want to play with physical presence, to me, he'd be a perfect Winnipeg Jet. You know, he's a big guy that can move. And when I watch Winnipeg play, not that I'm advocating at all that the franchise move Chris Kreider, because I do think he's that important. He's homegrown. But when you look at a guy that comes at you with some speed and size and intimidates you with those assets, he is a very, very good National Hockey League player.
You know, Dave, Ryan McDonough didn't play last night versus the Calgary Flames, and it looks like there's a chance that he won't make the trip to Winnipeg or Minnesota. How serious is this injury, and what have you thought of Ryan McDonough's play as of late?
Well, there's I don't know the significance of his injury. I know it's an upper body. I believe the injury was suffered when the team played in Nashville 3 games ago. So the severity, I don't know. I'm of the belief he won't make the trip. And I don't think he's been 100% healthy this season. He's fought a lower body issue. He's fought a groin issue. And also, too, he, as a captain of this team got out of the gate in less than stellar ways. And it's really the first time that he, as the kind of captain, had to deal with a team that really wasn't playing very well and was expected to be better. And lots of times a guy in that role then tries to rectify all the problems of his team with his own play. And I'm just not sure that that benefited Ryan nor the team. That being said, there's no question, this is a world-class defender. I think in 2014, he probably had his best season as a Ranger, and it looked like he was going to take that last step. But he doesn't quite have the instinctive offensive game that you see from a Carlson, from a Subban, from all Doughty. All the guys that get chatted up for the Norris just have a little more of an offensive game. But that being said, he is a very valuable guy, given the fact that the franchise is somewhat not quite as strong on the back end when you look at the farm system. So it's going to be very interesting moving forward. I know there's all kinds of chatter out there about them moving him. Unless there was a deal there that you could have someone to come back in and play for you, or a package that would knock you right out of the ballpark, my suspicions are I don't think he will get moved at the deadline. But depending on where this thing ends up and where Sather and Gorton intend to go in the off season, but for Lundqvist, I think everybody's out there for a certain price.
Dave Maloney is the New York Rangers radio analyst. The Rangers in town to Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon to meet the Jets. Dave, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you at the rink tomorrow afternoon.
All right. I mean, could you do me a favor and turn the heat up a little bit up there?
If we could, I promise you we would have turned it up about 3 weeks ago. We've been in a bit of a cold snap. So,
yeah, right.
Bring your parka is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay. Right, listen, look forward to seeing you guys, and thanks for the call. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Dave. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
When we come back, we discuss the Jets' backup goaltender situation. Does this put them in the market to make an acquisition? And we'll talk about the trade deadline in general. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Michael took a puck in the morning skate 2 days ago. It was fine, and then started feeling unusual after yesterday's skate, so he got tested. He has a concussion. He's in the program.
Paul Maurice giving an update on Winnipeg Jets backup goaltender Michael Hutchinson. Eric Comrie, you're the next man up in the revolving rotation of Winnipeg Jets back up goaltenders. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. The segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Michael Hutchinson joins Steve Mason on the IR. Eric Comrie, the backup goaltender to Connor Hellebuck for the foreseeable future. The Jets are in a... Obviously, it's never a great thing to have two of your three goaltenders on the IR. But the Jets, of course, don't have a back-to-back situation until the end of the month. Concussions are such a tricky thing that you never know how quickly somebody's going to bounce back from one, of course. Steve Mason has suffered his second this season. This is Michael Hutchinson's first this year that I know of course, Dave. He's been with the Moose for the majority of the season. Does this injury and maybe the uncertainty that comes along with it maybe make a backup goaltender something the Jets would be targeting ahead of the trade deadline?
I don't think so. I really don't think it can. I mean, the fact of the matter is Steve Mason skated for the first time back-to-back days, so it's a sign that he's getting closer to returning. I wouldn't say it's imminent, but I think the fact is that he's, you know, on the road to recovery. And I think Eric Comrie is back of the Eric Comrie we're used to seeing. You know, he was coming off an injury and he got some games in with the Moose. Still wasn't at 100%, but then they went on this road trip and he was dynamite on the road. And he was just excellent. So I the reality is I think that you'll have confidence in Eric Comrie coming back up, and I think Eric Comrie will want to have he has a lot to prove, I think, to himself. You know, and he's his own worst critic, and the fact of the matter is this guy analyzes the game like nobody's business. Like, he's very aware of everything that goes on. You ask Eric Comrie a question about a goal that went in, he'll describe it, he'll know what he did wrong, how he should have played it. So he's very analytical, and my thought is that if he gets that opportunity to play in that back-to-back, it's Dallas and
St. Louis. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think he would be fine to handle the responsibilities of being the backup goaltender. But to me, you've got so much money invested in Steve Mason for the next 2 years, and then you've got Michael Hutchinson, obviously, is coming off the books this year. But the reality is I just don't think that you're going to go and put money into that sort of asset.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dave. I don't think that there's any chance that the Jets move or acquire a goaltender prior to the upcoming trade deadline. And, you know, Steve Mason is getting very close to returning back to the Winnipeg Jets. We don't know exactly when that's going to be, but he, you know, he's been out for several weeks now. And, you know, Michael Hutchinson, to me, was very surprising because he dressed for the game Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had no idea that he had suffered a concussion. So it was very surprising to hear that he had suffered a concussion. You know, it's very rare that you have two goaltenders, you know, on the IR right now with concussions. So, you know, Steve Mason's going to come back. And, you know, for me, what's interesting is, you know, we were talking about, you know, the goalies prior to the homestand starting, and we were kind of speculating, you know, how many starts is Connor Hellebuyck going to get? And we said, you know, maybe eight, maybe nine. And I would expect Hellebuyck, you know, to get at least the next two or three starts. You know, he might start the next five games, depending on what happens with Steve Mason, because you know that once Steve Mason is activated, you know, they want to get him back into the lineup. So, you know, if Steve Mason is healthy later this week, you know, maybe you play him against Florida
next Sunday.
But as far as I'm concerned, you know, Hellebuck's going to start against New York. He's going to start against Washington. Wouldn't be surprised if he starts next Friday against Colorado. So, no, Drew, I don't think that, you know, Hutchinson and Mason, you know, being out of the lineup is really changing what Chevy wants to do, especially Hutchinson. You know, when it was just Mason out of the lineup, you know, Michael Hutchinson is a very capable backup for Connor Hellebuyck. So, you know, it's unfortunate, you know, for Hutchinson, who waits all year for this opportunity to play in the NHL, and then he has kind of that, you know, freak accident.
Friendly fire in practice.
Right. So yeah. It's really unfortunate for him, but, you know, we hope that they're back in the lineup sooner rather than later, right?
Moving away from the backup goaltender situation for the Jets and to general sort of trade deadline conversation, which is now 2 weeks plus 2 days away from us, a special edition of NHL This Week will
Thank
come.
Thank God. It seems like we've been talking about this for 3 months.
Well, a special edition of NHL.
Who's on the trade bait board now?
I'm not even talking about the trade bait. But yeah, you. We've already dealt you out. But the special edition of NHL This Week coming up on Monday of the trade deadline.
That's going to be a fun one.
That'll be, it always is a fun and entertaining show, presumably, as the deals.
I think there's going to be a lot of trades this year, by the way.
I suspect it won't be as exciting as the NBA trade deadline, but
that was pretty chaotic.
Put that on the board, Drew. There will be, and this is an Ezra guarantee, so you know what that means. It's absolutely nothing.
No chance.
Yeah. I think there's going to be more trades than there was last year.
Okay, well, we'll look at the numbers and we'll crunch the numbers and we'll remember your guarantee. A lot of talk, as Rick Nash, his name is being bandied about heavily, of course, and that both the Dallas Stars and the Nashville Predators are high atop the potential destinations for Rick Nash.
Let me stop you right there. I think Dallas makes tons of sense.
Well, Ken Hitchcock. He gets reunited with Ken Hitchcock.
He gets reunited with Ken Hitchcock, and he's very familiar with Ken Hitchcock, but it's also because, I mean, Dallas needs
wingers.
More offense on the wing. And we know how good that top line is. Mm-hmm. Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, Alex Radulov. They won again last night, and they're only 4 points, I believe, behind the Jets now. Or is it three?
It's
three or 4 points behind the Jets.
Yeah.
I don't have the standings in front of me. I should. I have a computer in front
of me. 3 points.
But, I mean, the Dallas Stars right now, I mean, they're so much better than they were last year. And, you know, not only do they need to, I think, add a top six winger, I think they need to add a defenseman as well.
They're 3 points separating Nashville and Dallas. Nashville, obviously, first in the Central Division, tied with the Jets. The Dallas Stars in fourth in the Central Division.
Yep.
So the top of the Central Division is certainly a tremendous logjam. The question I was going to have for you guys, if Dallas ends up acquiring Rick Nash, or he ends up in Nashville, or Nashville goes out and acquires somebody else, and Rick Nash ends up in Dallas, do the Jets need to keep up in a Central Division arms race?
No, I mean, You can't you know, make reactionary moves. I mean, and I don't think the Jets will. I think the Jets have a plan, and you know, I don't think you stray from that plan. So you know, I don't think that you have to keep up in an arms race. And to be honest with you, it's Winnipeg that Dallas is chasing, mm-hmm. right? So they're trying to keep up with the Jets. The Jets aren't trying to keep up with other teams.
So I think Matthew Perreault said it best when he talked about how in Washington they always made these deadline deals, and more often than not, they didn't end up working out. And I'm not saying that you can't make a splash, but I just don't see the need. And to be honest with you, when it talks about, you know, mortgaging the future, like, they're like, oh, people are asking about Roslovic. Well, then you hang up the phone.
Yeah, there is 0% chance the Jets are trading Roslovic.
I don't disagree with you, but I'm saying that the point I'm making is that people are suggesting that phone call is happening and that Jack Roslovic is the ask. And to me, you immediately hang up the phone because Jack Roslovic is your future, and there's a player you have the ability to control him for so many years, and he's a player who can be very successful in the NHL eventually. So to me, you don't take a risk of mortgaging your future for an opportunity that, you know, again, it's questionable at best.
You will never see another Martin Irat for Philip Forsberg trade.
Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic should not be coming up in trade chatter.
Well, no, the
Jets have developed these players. They're playing great right now for the Jets.
Yeah,
they're not trading them, period.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. There's no chance of that happening. Last quick point. In the latest Trade Center match game, you know, Frank Saravelli has been putting out those segments on TSN.ca. The first time the Jets have come up is with a link to the name of J.G. Pageau of the Ottawa Senators. You know, he's a centerman. He can also play the wing.
Yep.
You know,
he was really good for Ottawa in the playoffs last year. Yeah. Really good.
A breakout,
clutch scorer.
Yeah, he had something like 9 goals in the Senators' run to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Could you see a potential
shades
match
of John Drews there?
Yeah, there you go. From, was that the Washington Capitals?
That was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
It was over 20 years ago.
Pageau to the Jets. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but could you see that making sense for the Jets? That kind of acquisition? He's got term left on his deal, though. He's got a couple seasons left on the contract he signed with the Ottawa Senators.
Sure, I could see that happening. And you know, there are some players, I believe, that are more likely to move than others. And, you know, Ottawa is obviously a team that's not going to make the playoffs. But absolutely, I mean, you could make an argument for a lot of players, you know, coming to the Jets. I mean, we talked about it. I mean, Mike Hoffman, Derek Brassard, these are great hockey players. Now, whether or not the Jets are interested in those players, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unfortunately, you know, I've asked Chevy, you know, who he might be acquiring at the trade deadline, but he just tells me to get away from him. So, no, I'm kidding.
How did you get through security? I mean, what are you doing here?
I have absolutely
put on some pants for Matt, God's sakes,
exactly.
Man.
And so, I mean, sure. I mean, Peugeot's a great player. I mean, where does he fit in, right? I mean, the Jets have some injured bodies right now. And I think that, you know, when Adam Lowry is healthy again, there's a good chance that you see Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev paired up together on the third line or definitely in the lineup. So, you know, it's very tough to say who the Jets might acquire. And I'm not trying to give a cop-out answer here, Drew. I mean, J.G. Pageau is a great player.
Answer?
Well, I mean, that's a good pun.
Thank you.
You know, there are just so many players. I mean, Mike Hoffman's a name I keep hearing again and again.
Yeah, I keep saying it every Saturday.
Hoffman's a great hockey player. Someone's probably going to acquire him prior to the deadline. I just have absolutely no idea if that's going to be the Jets. Could happen, could not happen.
Dave, quickly.
I was just going to say, and the reality is you have a number of players who are going to come off the IR, and it's going to feel like an acquisition. You know, you get Adam Lowry, Brandon Tanev, Jacob Trouba. So you're going to have all these guys coming back into your lineup anyway. So to me, again, a big splash isn't necessary. Because look at what the team's done without any sort of injection of a new player. Is this going to put them over the edge and make them that much better than Nashville? I mean, that's the thing. That's what will be evaluated. But again, if it doesn't do it, you don't mortgage the future, in my mind, to give yourself just that much of a better chance.
And it's because the window has just started to open
for
the Jets, right?
Exactly.
They're not in a similar position as Nashville or, you know, some other teams that have been going for it. Yeah, so I agree. I don't see a big splash coming, but that obviously doesn't mean that the Jets don't make a few moves here.
2 weeks plus 2 days away from the trade deadline. You'll hear it all here on TSN 1290. When we come back, our good friend Marty B. Ron joins the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.